The president says people should not be able to purchase a gun if they're on a no-fly list. In real life, would this fly? We'll talk about it today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
During President Obama's Oval Office address on Sunday evening, he laid out two gun control measures he wanted Congress to act on immediately. One of them dealt with the nation's no-fly list.
To begin with, Congress should act to make sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security.
But many, including the ACLU, do have concerns about tying the no-fly list to a database for firearm purchases. Joining us now to talk about some of the issues it raises is Jeffrey Kahn, a professor at Southern Methodist University's Dedman School of Law. Professor, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on your program, David.
The president says, what could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a gun? Are those on a no-fly list indeed terrorist suspects, as the president put it?
Well, certainly they're terrorist suspects, but all of the action is in that last word. They're suspects. The no-fly list is made up of, as far as we know, two groups of people, known or suspected terrorists. Known terrorists are those who've been convicted of a terrorist offense. Suspected terrorists are people who, in the standard that's used by the agency that compiles these lists, are reasonably suspected of being a known or suspected terrorist. In other words, reasonably suspected of being suspected. That's a pretty low standard to take away somebody's rights.
All right, let's back up for just a moment. Who makes that determination as to whether or not one is reasonably suspected?
Well, ordinarily, when somebody's rights are taken away, you can point to a particular person or group of people like the Congress or a prosecutor or a judge. But in this case, I can only point you in a general direction. The Terrorist Screening Center is a multi-agency office housed in the FBI. And in a secret, undisclosed location somewhere in Northern Virginia, anonymous officials peruse intelligence information and based on their own criteria, not any criteria supplied by Congress, they decide who is reasonably suspected of being a suspected terrorist. And if they point the finger at you, your rights to movement, and now some are arguing to possess a firearm, or the list is expandable in many other ways, can be snatched away from you.
But I mean, you're not going to get innocence wrapped up in anything like this, right? I mean, if you got nothing to fear, you don't have to worry about finding your name on a no-fly list, right?
Well, the whole idea of our system of courts and separation of powers is that no one person should be able both to make the law and execute the law. That's a recipe for tyranny. And so what we tend to do is distribute the power in different branches so that one person can make the accusation or the claim, but then a neutral arbitrator can decide whether standards are met, and those standards can be established by a third branch of government. But in the case of the no-fly list and its larger cousin, the terrorist screening database, all of those decisions are made by a single entity, and you're not even allowed to know who they are or where they're doing their work, let alone have access to them to complain that you are an innocent person wrongly suspected.
Well, wait a minute, Professor. How would you even find out if you're on this list?
Well, it used to be that you would have to wait until you tried to obtain your boarding pass at the airport. But over a period of about 10 years, a variety of people claiming innocence have challenged these cases in court. And these cases have gone on for years. There's a very important case that will be heard tomorrow morning in Portland, Oregon, called Latif versus Lynch. And that case started in June 2010 when a disabled United States Marine Corps veteran found himself on a no-fly list.
Wow.
And because he couldn't get back to claim his disability benefits and prove that he was still eligible, he found his disability benefits cut by the Veterans Administration.
You know, Professor, people are going to hear you and think anything that could keep people from buying more guns is worth supporting, to which you would say what?
Well, I'm certainly not someone who favors easy access to firearms. That's not my personal political position. But as a matter of law, and I would think as a core value of our democratic republic, we believe that rights are different than mere courtesies. your right to freedom of speech, to possess a firearm under the Second Amendment to our Constitution, to free movement here and there, are not held at the grace and favor of the government, whether it's a state government or the federal government. That's the meaning of having rights. And so it's particularly disturbing to me that for issues so important that we would call them a constitutional right, we are willing to have those whisked away on a list that is not only very difficult to determine its accuracy or success rate, but every step of the way, the Department of Justice has opposed the attempts of those who feel they're wrongly on the list to clear their names.
SMU Law Professor Jeffrey Kahn, author of Mrs. Shipley's Ghost, The Right to Travel and Terrorist Watch Lists. Professor, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on the program, David.